This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every single show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, this is our first show to record after the passing of Leonard Nimoy, and a number of our listeners have asked if all the shows were going to do tributes to Leonard Nimoy. Deep Space Nine obviously doesn't have a direct connection to Leonard Nimoy the way that TNG does, but we thought we would try to talk about that a bit today anyway.
Well, Chris, it's something that I think has impacted us all in some way, whether large or small. You know, just the fact that Leonard Nimoy is gone, and, you know, having his connection from Star Trek all the way from the very beginning to Into Darkness is incredible. He's impacted all of the parts of fandom, you know, from the very first episode that didn't even premiere, you know, that they had to recast, and then he was on that next episode, and then of course with the films Next Generation, all the way to being a part of the JJ universe as well. So it's just something that it's been hard to deal with. And then, of course, with Harve Bennett passing as well, who had so much of an impact on, you know, what Star Trek became. It's been an interesting time to be a Star Trek fan, as we are losing some of the greats and the people that just kind of are legitimately responsible for making Star Trek what it is today. And how his impact really carries over into Deep Space Nine, I think, is really interesting, because that character of Spock had such an impact on what Star Trek was and the questions that it asked, that every subsequent series had somebody that resembled or asked those same type of questions that Spock kind of asked, which for me, as I watched the Spock character, were one about belonging, and who am I, and how do I fit in, and yet also at the same time I'm different, so I can comment on everything that I see because I'm somewhat removed as well. So all of those things really kind of play out in each Star Trek series differently, and on Deep Space Nine, it's probably the most unique as compared, because they're not, it's not a one for one in any way. You know, TNG has Data, and that's very much similar to the Spock character, except it, now it's more of a Pinocchio character. And then, of course, in Voyager, we have Tuvok, and it's very much a one for one almost. And the same with Enterprise, with T'Pol. So Deep Space Nine does it quite differently.
Right, yeah. And I think not just the types of questions Star Trek answers, but also how you approach those questions. Spock influenced all of Star Trek in that way. And of course, that was thanks to Leonard Nimoy, because he made Spock who he was, and he really defined what Vulcans are. And even though later series didn't use Vulcans, certainly TNG DS9 didn't use Vulcans in the way TOS did, and then, you know, Voyager reintroduced them, you can't escape in Star Trek the influence of Spock and Vulcans and Leonard Nimoy. And in DS9, the way I see it is something, now this was also mentioned on the Babel Conference, a suggestion from listener Greg Mullenby. He said the same thing that I've long thought, which is that on DS9, there are really two characters that feel like together represent what Spock always represented, and those are Odo and Jadzia. Because in Odo, you have the outsider, the character that's really commenting on humanity from an outside perspective, someone who doesn't really quite understand why humans do the things they do. Although in the case of Odo, he's talking about humanoids, as opposed to Spock on the original series talking specifically about humans from Earth. And then you have Jadzia, who is the scientific mind. And another angle with Jadzia, when you're trying to connect her to Spock, is the fact that Vulcans are very long-lived. And when you see Spock in The Undiscovered Country, he's a character who has learned to balance logic with experience and wisdom. And that's what we see in Jadzia, even though she's this young, I think 28 years old, I believe is what she says, is her age when she comes aboard the station in Emissary. She's actually like 328, as Sisko says. And so she has learned how to take all of this and roll it up together. And that's what I see in Spock as well. And Leonard Nimoy really set how to portray that with the character as well in those scenes, really throughout, I would say, The Undiscovered Country.
Well, and what's so interesting is to see them find the different kind of parts of the Spock character in those questions, and then kind of create those two different characters to be able to ask them. And yet, it never feels as though that they're just trying to mimic
right.
Spock.
They're not trying to recapture Spock on this show.
Right. Which I think is very, very wise on their part, because I think many fans maybe felt like with TNG that it was a little too on the nose with the Data character sometimes. And so here they really disseminate that between these two characters to kind of broaden it and kind of make it their own. You know, Odo does feel like his own character. Jadzia definitely feels like her own character. And yet with them combined throughout the series of Deep Space Nine, you're able to get that same kind of perspective, which is very important. You do need those characters. And what's interesting is on Deep Space Nine, you even have some other characters like, say, Quark or any of the other alien characters that really get to sometimes ask those questions that a Spock character might. But on Deep Space Nine, we have a lot more of them than we did in any of the other series, because Quark makes those observations about human beings and even just the Federation too, I think, which is really interesting. We kind of broaden it. It's not just human behavior, but it's Federation behavior. And I thought that was a nice extrapolation of alien characters on Star Trek that are asking questions about the kind of preconceived notions that our regular characters have.
Yeah, and I can see the path there from, as Star Trek grows from what Spock was, what Vulcan-human relationship was early on, to there, because of Deep Space Nine, it just broadens the universe so much. Here's something else I was thinking about, Matthew. When we don't see Vulcans a lot on Deep Space Nine, but we do have some cases where Vulcans appear. You know, I'm thinking in particular of with the Maquis, you have a Vulcan who's trying to buy arms, right? Which just seems like very counterintuitive to how we think of Vulcans. Do you think that this is an attempt by the writers to establish diversity, move away a bit from what Spock and what Vulcans had represented up to that point?
That is a good question, because the other instance that I really think of Vulcans being there is obviously Take Me Out to the Holosuite, where it seems like the most stereotypical Vulcans you've ever seen before. So yeah, that's a really interesting idea, that in some ways they show how Vulcans can really use their logic to make something like the Maquis idealism work for them, that they could rationalize that through logic. And then, of course, on the other side, we're just going to kind of give you the what everybody kind of thinks Vulcans would probably be like in their head, which is that whole ship with Captain Solok, who's just everything that you think of when you think Vulcan, the word Vulcan, that's what you kind of think of in your mind as that kind of very non-emotional, arrogant, stuck up. In fact, I think he might be the proto Vulcan for the Enterprise series.
Interesting.
Complete pain in the butt, you know, just very arrogant, the way that they come off in Enterprise. He's definitely the prototype.
I never thought about that, but yeah. Yeah, it could be. Now here's one. Now, I said up front that there was no direct connection between Leonard Nimoy and Deep Space Nine. Actually, there is, now that I think about it, that they did use footage of Spock in Trials and Tribulations.
This is true. And in fact, you know, we have Terry Farrell's character Dax talk about how handsome Spock was, really referencing how so many fangirls in the 60s, it wasn't Kirk who was getting their fan mail. It was Spock. And I just think that's fantastic that they, you know, went back in time, and they were reliving that time period, and she's playing what more than half of the female fans were writing the Spock, not Kirk. And he became this kind of awkward, strange sex symbol, you know, like he's the original emo, you know, geek sex symbol right there. So, yeah, really great that they actually, of all the crews, you know, beyond the original series, they're the ones who get to really play with and live in that time period. You know, they get to meet Kirk. They get to meet Spock. You know, they're on the original Enterprise. So yeah, that's a really, really good callback, Chris. I'm surprised we didn't.
I think it's
about
too
before.
Obvious because we're trying to think of like
that's true.
Like with TNG, you think of unification. So he's really there with the Abrams verse. He's really there, and this is just past footage. You know, it's in the same way that we would say there's no direct connection with William Shatner and Deep Space Nine. But of course, there is, because Sisko gets to meet and shake hands with the great captain.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really, I think it's just a unique thing, and we have talked about on the show before, but how Deep Space Nine, the writers have a real love for the original series. And I think in a lot of ways, they really take that Spock character and what he did, and they use those same questions, and then they extrapolate from those, and they disseminate those into all of the characters in some way to create a milieu that feels familiar and yet is very much its own all at the same time. You know, I don't think anybody watches Deep Space Nine and thinks, what just a complete ripoff of the original series.
No. Yeah.
But I think if you were to watch the original series and you then watch Deep Space Nine and you were to skip The Next Generation, you would feel like it's a great continuation of that series. Like, that's an extrapolation of the original series' future. In more so a direct way than TNG is.
Well, you really would. Yeah, because, there are so many references that are dropped in. I mean, even things like Tholian silk. You know, those are things that they're always callbacks. The Ready Room we just recorded before this show, we talked about looking for Parmok in all the wrong places. And the fact that Quark refers to having to learn all of this Klingonese.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of connections there.
Well, and even just the connection with the fact that the way that the TNG characters relate to each other, you know, they're always barbing each other. They're always, you know, digging at each other. They're always a little sarcastic or snarky to each other in a lot of ways, especially like McCoy and Spock and that kind of relationship. And that really plays over into Deep Space Nine, because not only are these characters Starfleet officers, but we've got Bajorans and Klingons and all sorts of races all over the place on Deep Space Nine. And therefore, the way that they relate to each other isn't that like perfect kind of posh way that you get on TNG. This is very much just everyday life with these people, as the way that it felt like on the original series, where you'd have those down times before the big action started, and they're just joshing with each other, kidding each other. It all ends in a laugh, you know, and a joke. That's Deep Space Nine in a lot of ways. People don't think of it that way. We always think of it as dark and gritty, but there's a lot more of that kind of goofing off before all the action happens than I think a lot of the other series.
Well, now, and Looking for Parmok definitely ends with a good laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yes, like definitely a good laugh. Yeah. There's a lot going on in that episode.
You know, in the original series, Leonard Nimoy was playing Spock as the alien. You've got this ship full of humans, and you've got this one alien. Whereas on Deep Space Nine, you have all these aliens. It just makes me wonder, as I'm listening to you talk about that, how Leonard Nimoy might have approached the character of Spock if he were on a show where he wasn't carrying the banner for the outsider all alone, as he was on TOS.
And that's a great question, Chris, because I think that, you know, on the original series, Spock is the touch point for all of us who, and I think all of us at some point in our lives, we felt like the outsider, like we don't fit in, like we're trying to find out where we belong. Whereas Deep Space Nine is really about all of the characters trying to find out where they belong. Odo, Sisko, Kira, O'Brien in some ways. Some ways you've got Bashir, Dax, and sometimes too, especially once you get to Ezri Dax. Worf. I mean, all of these characters are outsiders. They are people who don't feel like they fit in some ways in other places, yet in the beauty of the storytelling, they become this strange amalgamation, this nice family, you know, this great alchemy that comes together to create another Star Trek family. And it is really great. And again, I think of Una McCormick's book, The Missing, and Odo says, Deep Space Nine has always been a home for the homeless. And I think Spock would have felt maybe more at home in a place like this, where he wasn't so different and he didn't stand out so much. Yet at the same time, it was the beauty of the original series to kind of have him be half human and learn kind of what it meant to be truly human from somebody like Kirk and McCoy, you know, those two sides of humanity.
So, you know, I'm thinking right now in terms of DS9 too, I'm picturing Garrick as being that person who's... Because I was thinking Worf, but the thing with Worf is that he grew up with humans. But with Spock, he didn't grow up with humans, right? I mean, he grew up with a human mother, but he grew up on Vulcan. And then he went off, and now when we meet Spock, he's been in Starfleet for a good while, but you can tell that he still hasn't really acclimated himself fully to serving with humans, and definitely could feel like the outsider. And on DS9, speaking of Garrick, you know, he's someone who grew up on Cardassia. Now he's finding himself in an uncomfortable environment and maybe doesn't necessarily feel that he can be himself, and his actions are puzzling to many of his crewmates, just as Spock's actions are puzzling, especially to Dr. McCoy.
Well, and that is a really strange thing to watch on Star Trek is how the alien characters always, maybe sadly or strangely, always tend to become more human as they go along.
Natural. You know, because they're around.
Yeah, humans. They tend to adapt. Yeah, to the environment around them and kind of adopt a more human way of looking at
start
things.
Drinking root beer.
Always. Yeah, exactly. That bubbly stuff. It's sweet and it just gets
it's kind of
to
insidious.
You. It's like the Federation. It is.
That should be their tagline, A&W. It's insidious.
One pop, you can't stop. Wait, that's Pringles.
They're insidious as well.
Yeah. But it is a really interesting thing, and I really think, and I always come back to, you know, Spock in The Undiscovered Country, and I feel like he's finally become the best version of himself. Yeah. He's finally comfortable with the Vulcan and the human side, the warring factions of himself aren't at war anymore.
Because that's his journey.
He's found peace.
Star Trek.
Yeah. And we do. We see that in Deep Space Nine with the characters there and how they're all in some way at war itself. I mean, Kira very much somebody who's firing and just, I mean, there's your wormhole! You know, it's like she's very much at war with
everyone. Well, you
everyone,
know, the way she says that, now that you say it right here, I'm just, it's the same enthusiasm as check the circuit.
Yes, exactly.
There's your circuit.
The way Spock is. Yep, exactly. So, or, you know, Sisko obviously being at war with himself. Worf, we've seen, you know, specifically again, Ezri, when she gets the symbiont. You know, even Bashir, you know, being that kind of cocky and brash person who goes from that to being calm, collected, a little bit more cynical because of his time with Garak. Yeah. You know, the way that the personalities kind of rub off on each other. It's just, it's very, very interesting to see that the way that the Spock character came to create something very important that had to be in each Star Trek series because of the questions that it asked. And yet I think, because of the way that I feel about Deep Space Nine, I just feel like they do that the best because it asks those same questions, but I never feel like it's just, oh, we have to do this because Spock did it. No, we need to do it because they're great questions. We need these characters to keep asking them, but we also need it to feel unique in our own. And Deep Space Nine finds a way to make that feel like it's unique in and of itself. Like if you had never seen the original series, you know, right, you wouldn't know where it came from. And yet it feels natural for the series to have these characters asking these questions.
Well, coming back around to Odo, who, you know, I said at the top of the show that the two characters that I see as being most directly influenced by Spock and Nimoy, of course, are Odo and Jadzia. What strikes me with Odo, it always struck me from the very beginning of DS9, and it's more prevalent in the first season, especially in the first half of the first season, is that Odo is like the mouthpiece for commenting on humanity, just as Data was on TNG, but of course, Data is that way in TNG, I feel, largely because of Spock in the original series. And as an example, there's a scene that always comes to mind for me at the beginning. It's the very beginning, actually, of If Wishes Were Horses, where he's at the bar and he's talking to Quark. And he says, I have no time for fantasies. And Quark says, ah, no imagination, huh? And you can picture someone saying that to Spock, too, right? Like, they think Spock has no imagination. It seems like the way you would think about Vulcans. But Odo says, it's a waste of time. Too many people dream of places they'll never go, wish for things they'll never have, instead of paying adequate attention to their real lives. And that it's just a commentary on humanity. And there are many other instances where he makes comments like that. I think back to Necessary Evil, when Sisko asks him to start recording a station, a security log for the station, and Odo's explanation of it in his log, he says, "At the request of Commander Sisko, I will hereafter be recording a daily log of law enforcement affairs. The reason for this exercise is beyond my comprehension, except perhaps that humans have a compulsion to keep records and lists and files." And that's just the kind of thing like where it doesn't really make sense why humans do things a certain way, and our character has to figure out why and has to adapt because he has to serve with these people.
Yeah, it's something that we wouldn't normally think about because it's just so normal and natural for us. Oh, yeah, you keep a log. I mean, that's what you do. You have a captain's log or, you know, a commander's log or a doctor's log, or you just keep records. You know, whether anybody actually ever reads those records, we don't know.
Yeah, don't you wonder, like, is there somebody whose job it is in San Francisco to just read logs all day long?
Can you imagine how boring it would be to read some lieutenant commander's log who's got to be the most boring thing you've ever heard in your life? You know, just ramble on about blah, blah, blah,
Here's
blah, blah.
Here's my solution
you know?
To that, Matthew, though. So the logs come in as, well, I guess they're going to be voice probably, right? But I would just get the text transcripts of them, and I would have the computer read them to me in Leffler's voice.
That is a good idea. That, or honestly, I mean, you could have them read in Patrick Stewart's voice, you know, Captain Picard, and I mean, really, you could listen to the phone book at that point.
No, I've got a solution to all this, Matthew. The voice that will be used to read all ship logs to you is Grand Nagus Zek.
That's not even funny, Chris.
Matthew's like, I'm looking for new employment tomorrow.
I feel like if somebody shot me in the head, it would be more comfortable.
Okay.
So, yeah. It probably would, other than... I don't even want to do his voice for you, listeners, because I feel like you'd stop listening to the show. So I'll move forward.
So about Odo, though, and Odo being that outsider, yeah, that's a strong connection that I feel. And he makes a lot more comments like that over the course of the season. I didn't create a list, because we're just talking off the top of our heads here today, but he's definitely that voice from the outside.
Well, and I think that is an important thing to have a show like this. One of the best things that you can do is to have it turned back towards you. You know, not just ask questions about what's out there, but ask questions about us, because in the end, Star Trek is about the human condition, the human experience. And we're trying to understand ourselves better through that. And that's what the original series did best. And I think Deep Space Nine carries on that grand tradition by asking us very important questions and doing it through a lot of different people. You know, throughout the show, for Deep Space Nine, it's not just a Spock type character. Yeah. There's a bunch of different characters that will ask us that question, and that's really cool.
You know, an interesting connection that it was never explored at all on Deep Space Nine, but it could have been. You have to assume that Dax met Spock at some point, because Curzon was an ambassador. You would think that there was a very good chance that Curzon would have crossed paths with Spock, and that would have been interesting to know what those connections would be.
Well, that would make a great book specifically because, Curzon is involved with the Khitomer Accords. Spock is at Khitomer when those are being talked about, so you would think they would have run into each other.
They probably hung out in the bar together.
I can picture
a drunk Curzon singing while Spock plays the Vulcan harp for him.
That is a possibility, because we do know that Spock likes to play his harp and let other people sing.
Absolutely. And we also know that Charlie Evans hates it.
It can grate on you. You know, it might... It, yeah. It's a tough thing to listen to. Vulcans have a different sound pitch than we do, and I think sometimes it just annoys humans.
Maybe so. But that would be interesting. I mean, that has to be something. And as small as they tend to make the Star Trek universe, where like every character knows everybody and they all cross paths, that certainly would have happened.
Yeah, and it just makes sense, and it would be very, very interesting to read a story about Spock and Curzon, you know, crossing paths and what that might look like, because I think at that point they are very, very different characters. You know, Curzon is so full of life and so kind of larger than life at that point, and Spock is much more reserved and he's comfortable with himself, and yet he doesn't have a lot of excess to him, whereas Curzon seems to have a lot of excess.
You know, not just reading a story like that, but I'm thinking that it's a missed opportunity. Maybe DS9 should have... I'm not big on cameos, first of all. You know, it has to make sense. If it makes sense, I'm all for it. If it's a gimmick, then I'm not in favor of it. But just as they had Blood Oath and they had Kor King and Koloth come back on, and they did that story with Jadzia, they could have had Leonard Nimoy on and had a story involving Dax. And just as we're talking about now, the fact that Spock is someone that she knew. I mean, Spock's still around at the time. He's on Romulus. The Romulans play a role in DS9.
I think that it would have made a really interesting story for Spock to need Jadzia for some reason because of her experience with Curzon. And of course, obviously having been Curzon. So I think, there's a whole realm of possibilities that makes so much sense that I'm surprised that they just never went there. And maybe they just felt like they didn't want to because of the next generation.
It could be. I mean,
unification.
Yeah.
But I definitely a lost opportunity. Would have been fantastic to have him play with the great Terry Farrell there and even maybe show us some great flashbacks as well.
Yeah.
To a very important period in Star Trek history, mainly maybe the Kittimer Accords.
Yeah, they could have done that. Yeah. Yeah, it could have been a case where they felt at the time, so it's easy for us to sit here now in 2015 and look back and think about all these story possibilities, but in terms of the actual production, not so many years would have passed between unification and when they may have done that on DS9. And it is quite possible that even you and I at the time may have said, oh, wow, that's quite a gimmick to get him back on the show. Whereas now we look at it and think, yeah, it could have made a great episode. So I can certainly see them even shying away from something like that. I mean, because Q on DS9, you know, we feel that was just purely done to get people to watch the show, hear some ratings, and it didn't turn out well. And it could be, too, that could have caused them to shy away from other cameo appearances later on.
Well, and I think, though, that with the Deep Space Nine writers, I trust them completely at the point they probably would have wanted to have Nimoy on. I don't think it would have been a gimmick at that point. I definitely think, I mean, just as they did with Trials and Tribulations, I think this would have just been hands down fantastic. There's nothing about it that I feel like at that point they probably would have messed up.
Because Blood Oath doesn't feel like a gimmick at all. And it's great that they had the actual actors come back to play Kor King and Koloth in a story that you completely buy, right? That Jadzia has this Blood Oath.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Completely. So having Spock come back and need somebody like Jadzia because of her connection with Curzon, again, it feels very much like something they've already done with Blood Oath. But at the same time, again, would have been fantastic if they maybe made it a two-parter where we were getting some flashbacks and, oh gosh, it just could have been something pretty amazing, I think. So, missed opportunity, and I think just shows the versatility of Leonard Nimoy's Spock and just what an impact he had on the Star Trek universe. Again, from the cage all the way to Star Trek Into Darkness.
And wouldn't it have been amazing if they had brought him in to direct an episode of DS9?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if they could have afforded
him. No, I don't think they could have. But just thinking about potential connections, I mean, that would have been something.
Yeah. I mean, again, Leonard had an amazing impact on every single aspect of Star Trek, you know, in front of the camera and behind the camera. And he set a precedent for people behind the camera. And many people ended up following him and becoming very successful at it. You know, I think of Robbie Duncan McNeil. Yep. I think of, obviously, LeVar Burton, Roxana Dawson, and so many others. Jonathan Frakes, obviously. You know, so the amount of things that he did for Star Trek, all of Star Trek, and even something like Deep Space Nine, where we don't see a lot of direct connections, it's just fantastic. And so he'll be missed, and I'm glad that we got a chance to just kind of talk about this and talk about Deep Space Nine through an entirely different lens than we normally do, Chris.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice to look at the influences. And even, and again, you know, I mean, this is a show today where we're basically just talking off the top of our heads without any prep for, because how do you approach Leonard Nimoy in DS9, right? So what the fun of it, the exercise for us today, is just bouncing off of each other and, you know, where can we go? What ideas pop up as we go along? So it is unique.
How do you approach a subject like Leonard Nimoy? How do you catch a cloud and pin it down? Sorry, I don't know what made that come out, Chris.
It's that music inside you, Matthew, that's always on the verge of bursting.
It's the sound
out,
of music.
You can't control it.
It is the sound of music.
All right, good. All right. Well, we've shared some of our thoughts and ideas and theories and such with you. We'd love to hear yours about Leonard Nimoy and DS9 connections, because who knows what you may come up with as well. There are so many possibilities. And of course, it's theoretical, but it would have been great to see. Just from every corner of the Star Trek universe, it is sad that Leonard Nimoy has passed, and very few people had the kind of impact that he had on Star Trek, certainly, but I would say pop culture and storytelling, just across the board. Matthew, can you imagine anyone around the world who has access to a television and movies not knowing Leonard Nimoy and knowing Spock, even if they've never actually watched an episode of Star Trek?
You know, Chris, I think that of all the characters on Star Trek, I think Spock is probably the one who's just the most recognizable. Yeah. You know, he's the one that if somebody has access to a television around the world, they have most likely seen a Star Trek episode, and it's probably been an original series episode, and the thing that probably stood out to them was the strange alien person. And the impact that he's had is just incalculable. And I thought it was great the fact that we got that opportunity to talk about him. And it's funny, the axiom of Spock, there are always possibilities.
Yeah, it's a great line.
And I love the fact that we were able to come up with some possibilities that made complete sense for him to actually be a part of Deep Space Nine that we kind of saw as maybe being some missed possibilities. Yeah. And so just amazing that character, I think, in so many ways lived out that axiom in the fact that that's how the JJ verse exists, because of Spock. There are always possibilities.
And so I must ask you, Matthew, how do you feel?
Young.
There you go. That's the answer I was expecting. All right. So everyone, if you want to share your ideas and thoughts with us, we would love to hear them. Come over and join us in the Babel Conference on Facebook. That is our listeners group. It's a closed group. We only promote it here on the air. But we have many, many members over there. Great conversations all the time. Just go to Facebook, type B-A-B-E-L into the search field, and it'll come right up. Or go to our website and click discussion, and that'll take you right over there. Click join, Matthew, or I will let you on in there, and we hope you'll join us there. Now, Leonard Nimoy is a topic that has been at the forefront of the network over the past week. Most of our shows have paid tribute to him in some way, either by talking about him at the beginning of their regularly scheduled episode or by doing special episodes. Just depends on the show. Personally, Larry Nemechek and I sat down and we talked for an hour about Leonard, and you can check that out on the Ready Room. And all the other shows, Ken and John have a great show over there on Mission Log as well, dedicated to the memory of Leonard, and some thoughts from Rod and Barry as well. So check all of those out, as well as the many other topics that we are talking about here on the network each week. And here's a quick look at some of those things.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And celebrate his life and celebrate his work and his talent and his integrity. And if you get a tear in the eye, that's okay. That's he would approve. Spock would approve. And, you know, he'd say, you humans, why do you feel you need to do this? But he would approve.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Martaban to, like, walk around the corner and be like, Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Risa 5.
The shuttlecraft.
The orb.
Usually you want to be able to capture it or isolate one, but you can't do that either because it just keeps, you know, so... really does seem like a conundrum of, okay, how do we take this down?
You know, this minefield, they are the tribbles of war.
To the journey! One guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out now! The Ready Room.
Riker's all pissed because he can't prop his leg up with no gravity.
Yeah, he tries, though. He tries.
He's trying. I can picture it. He's
but got then the just, momentum makes him somersault.
Which really just makes him look spread eagle.
Going in circles.
He's spinning.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, actually, it started out life as a comic book pitch. I originally came up with it to pitch to Wildstorm back when they had the comics license. The idea was it would be a one-year series that would run throughout the 12 calendar months of 2001, which was the 35th anniversary of Star Trek.
The 602 Club.
Sometimes that just works better because you can create and craft a story that's very compelling because you're not having to worry about what's happened other places. Okay, we have to make sure this is going to connect to this, and my guess is somehow Agent Carter is going to have something to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later on, and maybe something that happens in Age of Ultron.
Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what else we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. We're in iTunes, we're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, SoundCloud, all the small podcast directories as well. You can go to our website and you can stream from the show page or download the MP3 file or even grab the RSS link if you have some other application that you'd like to drop that into. Now, Matthew, if people want to share their thoughts with us on Leonard Nimoy, besides the Babel Conference, which I already mentioned, or anything else about DS9, where should they go? How can they contact us?
Well, Chris, they can do that at trek.fm/contact. They'll just want to choose a show, The Orb, and that message will come to me or you, and we'll get a chance to respond to them that way. And they can do so on speakpipe.com, so they could just leave us a voicemail. That would be great.
That's right. Just speakpipe.com/trekfm.
That's trekfm, yes. Or they can also do that on the show page. You'll see the little sidebar on the show page. You can leave us a voicemail there. So we're, of course, on Twitter at TrekFM, and then we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM.
Yeah, that's our main page run by Suzanne Abbott. And Suzanne puts great questions up there every day, actually. So if you want to go over and participate in the questions on our main Facebook page, which is separate from our discussion group, that's a really great place to go as well and interact with Star Trek fans. So, Matthew, when you're not coming up with the next great story involving Spock, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I also do the show Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, which, you know, it means more these days, especially when you realize that the character of Spock is not gone, because he keeps popping up in fantastic Star Trek stories. And so if you've never read a Star Trek book and you're missing Spock, now's really the best time to do so. And there's so many to choose from.
Well, Matthew, that reminds me of Dr. McCoy's great line from the end of The Wrath of Khan when he says, "He's not really dead as long as we keep writing about him."
It's quite similar, though, Chris. I think the line might be a little bit different, but I think the sentiment would be the same from
McCoy.
Yeah,
I think the original is maybe a little bit more touching as well.
Of course, you can also find me on the 602 Club, where we just pick a great geeky topic each week and we talk about that. So whether it's Indiana Jones or something about Star Wars, or maybe just the new TV show that's something geeky will... It's just so much fun. Plenty of great guests just drop by and have a great time talking about those things. And you can also find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not just hanging out at Quark's Bar, just being so thankful that you're not the only quote-unquote outsider there on the station, where can we find you?
Yeah, you don't recognize me, though, because I got my new Morn suit on.
That's what that was. Yeah. I thought you looked kind of funny.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. You can also find me there in the Babel Conference on Facebook. And then I have restarted my blog as well. I took all my old content offline. I may put some of it back on later, but I wanted a fresh start. So I have reset my blog. You can go over and read my piece on Leonard Nimoy and my thoughts on his passing. And that's at C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y, of course, cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, you can find me on The Ready Room each week, where I'm joined by hosts from all around the network as we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series, as well as other special topics. And we've been doing a couple of special shows here lately. I kind of wish we hadn't, because the reason we're doing them is because we lost Leonard Nimoy and we lost Harv Bennett. So my friend Larry Nemechek and I grabbed a bit of time on the mic together to sit down and do a show about Leonard Nimoy. And also yesterday we recorded one about Harv Bennett, which will probably be out by the time this orb drops, or pretty close to the time of this. So tune into those. Help us remember these great men and great contributors to the Star Trek universe. And then beyond The Ready Room, you can also find me on Hyper Channel once or twice a week, where I just bring you some short Star Trek news stories. Well, Matthew, I'm glad we got to talk about this today, and it was very interesting, and I hope everyone else will share their thoughts with us.
I hope so too, Chris, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.